Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The oil companies are going to go in, they're going to spend money, we're going to take back the oil that, frankly, we should have taken back a long time ago.
The oil, stupid. That's part of the title of a new piece on Venezuela by Mehdi Hassan of Zeteo. He'll join us to look at President Trump's public vow to take Venezuela's oil after U.S. forces attacked Venezuela and seized President Nicolas Maduro. We'll also look at Trump's escalating threats against Mexico, Colombia, and Cuba, and what he's calling the Monroe Doctrine.
And the Monroe Doctrine is a big deal, but we've superseded it by a lot, by a real lot. They now call it the Monroe Doctrine.
Chevron stock surged yesterday. We'll speak to a Wall Street Journal reporter on why oil company stocks are going up, as well as how Trump family businesses have generated at least $4 billion since he was reelected. In December, Trump Media merged with a company aiming to build the world's first viable nuclear fusion plant to power AI projects. The move was announced shortly after Trump signed an executive order to bar states and local governments from enacting their own AI regulations. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Venezuela's deposed president, Nicolas Maduro, appeared in federal court Manhattan Monday, where he pleaded not guilty to four criminal counts, including narco-terrorism, conspiracy, cocaine importation, and conspiracy and possession of machine guns and destructive devices. If convicted, each charge carries a maximum sentence of life in prison. During his arraignment, Maduro declared, "I'm not guilty. I'm a decent man. I remain the president of my country," Maduro said. In charging documents, prosecutors abandoned the Justice Department's prior claim that Maduro is head of a drug cartel called Cartel de los Soles. In fact, no such organization exists. It's a Venezuelan slang term dating to the 1990s, referring to public officials who are corrupted by drug money. Meanwhile, Maduro's wife, Celia Flores, pleaded not guilty to the three criminal counts she faces. She appeared with bandages on her temple and forehead. Her lawyer says she suffered significant injuries, including a possible rib fracture as she was abducted by a U.S. Army Delta Force team in a pre-dawn raid on the presidential residence in Caracas early Saturday. Venezuelan officials say the U.S. assault caused at least 80 deaths. In Caracas, Venezuela's Vice President Delcy Rodriguez was formally sworn in as interim president Monday. On Saturday, Rodriguez was initially defiant in her condemnation of the Trump administration's assault, calling it barbaric and a violation of Venezuelan sovereignty. But during a cabinet meeting Monday, Rodriguez continued with a more conciliatory tone, saying her government would engage in some cooperation with the U.S. This comes after President Trump threatened her in an interview with The Atlantic magazine, saying, quote, "If she doesn't do what's right, she's going to pay a very big price, probably bigger than Maduro," Trump said. The United States faced widespread condemnation from members of the United Nations Security Council, who convened an emergency session in New York Monday to discuss the U.S. attack on Venezuela. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told ambassadors there must be respect for national sovereignty, political independence, and territorial integrity after warning the U.S. had set a dangerous precedent for the world order. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Mike Waltz defended the Trump administration's actions as a legitimate law enforcement operation, unquote. Condemning the attacks as a violation of the U.N. Charter were Brazil, China, Colombia, Cuba, Eritrea, Mexico, Russia, South Africa, and Spain. This is Venezuela's ambassador to the United Nations, Samuel Moncada.
Allowing such acts to go without an effective answer would amount to normalizing the replacement of law by might, while eroding the very foundations of the collective security system. Today, it is not only the sovereignty of Venezuela at stake. At stake is the credibility of international law, as is the authority of this organization, as well as the principle that no state can appoint itself as judge and enforcer of the world order.
Meanwhile, demonstrators rallied outside the federal courthouse in Manhattan, where Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores, were being arraigned on Monday, protesting both for and against his detention by the United States. The protests were among dozens held around the U.S. since Maduro's abduction. In Michigan, anti-war demonstrators took to the streets of downtown Grand Rapids Saturday afternoon. Protest organizer Jessica Plichta spoke with local ABC affiliate WZZM.
We want to stop war with Venezuela. We want to end all U.S. wars. We don't want boots on the ground in Venezuela. We don't want to fight Venezuela for oil. We don't want our friends and families to be sent to Venezuela and be killed for oil.
As Plichta concluded her interview, two police officers appeared behind her on camera and arrested her. She's been charged with obstructing a roadway and failure to obey a lawful command from an officer during the protest. President Trump tipped off oil executives roughly a month before the U.S. kidnapped Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. That's according to reporting by The Wall Street Journal. Speaking to reporters on Air Force One Sunday, President Trump said he'd spoken to oil executives before and after the U.S. attack on Venezuela, but he did not inform Congress. Paul Singer, a billionaire who's a top donor to President Trump, is set to profit immensely since his investment firm purchased Citgo, the U.S.-based subsidiary of Venezuela's state-owned oil company, for $5.9 billion. The Venezuelan government estimates Citgo's value at $18 billion. Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado said Monday she plans to return to Venezuela as soon as possible. She made the comment in an interview with Fox News' Sean Hannity, where she heaped praise on President Trump, offering to share her Nobel Peace Prize with him. Her comments came after Trump dismissed the idea of installing her as Venezuela's leader, saying, quote, she doesn't have the support within or respect within the country, unquote. The Washington Post reports Trump's refusal to support Machado stemmed from her decision to accept the Nobel Peace Prize. One source told the Washington Post, quote, if she turned it down and said, I can't accept it because it's Donald Trump, she'd be president of Venezuela today, unquote. Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate is set to debate a war powers resolution Thursday that would bar U.S. military action against Venezuela without congressional authorization. Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen warned that if the United States were to try to take over Greenland, it would spell the end of NATO. Told the Danish state broadcaster, quote, if the United States chooses to attack another NATO country militarily, then everything stops, unquote. Her comments come as President Trump has repeatedly threatened to use military force to take over the autonomous Danish territory, telling reporters on Sunday, quote, we need Greenland from the standpoint of national security, and Denmark is not going to be able to do it, unquote. Greenland's Prime Minister Jens Frederik Nielsen posted on social media, quote, our country's not an object in the rhetoric of a superpower. We are a people, a country, a democracy. That must be respected, especially by close and loyal friends, unquote. Speaking to CNN, U.S. Homeland Security Advisor, Presidential Advisor Stephen Miller asserted the U.S. has the right to take over Greenland.
The United States should have Greenland as part of the United States. There's no need to even think or talk about this in the context that you're asking of a military operation. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland.
Israel launched airstrikes in southern and eastern Lebanon, claiming to target Hezbollah and Hamas infrastructure. Lebanon's health ministry said a drone strike on a car in the south of Lebanon Monday wounded two people. Israel's continued its attacks in Lebanon despite a U.S.-brokered ceasefire between Hezbollah and Israel back in 2024. Meanwhile, in Gaza, Israeli forces hit a tent housing displaced people in the El Moasi area northwest of Khan Yunis, killing a 5-year-old girl and her uncle and wounding 2 other children. Israeli forces also shot a child in the head in Beit Lahia in northern Gaza, close to the yellow line that separates Israeli-controlled areas from the rest of Gaza. The U.S. has dropped the number of vaccines it recommends for every child, going from 17 to 11 routine vaccines, vaccines like flu, rotavirus, hepatitis A and B, RSV, and some meningitis shots are no longer broadly recommended for all children. Instead, those vaccines are only recommended for certain groups deemed high risk. Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm of the Vaccine Integrity Project said, quote, abandoning recommendations for vaccines that prevent influenza, hepatitis, and rotavirus, and changing the recommendation for HPV without a public process to weigh the risks and benefits will lead to more hospitalizations and preventable deaths among American children, he said. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy, a physician who voted for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s confirmation as Health and Human Services Secretary, sharply criticized the new vaccine schedule, saying it's based on, quote, no scientific input, unquote. It comes as new U.S. flu cases surged over the holidays, already surpassing the flu epidemic of last winter, which was one of the harshest in recent years. The CDC estimates at least 11 million flu illnesses, 120,000 hospitalizations, and 5,000 deaths this season. Democratic lawmakers are demanding House Speaker Mike Johnson unveil a plaque honoring police officers who defended the Capitol against a violent mob seeking to overturn the 2020 election 5 years ago today, January 6, 2021. The plaque was commissioned by Congress in 2022 and was required by law to be installed by March 2023. But it remains in a Capitol basement utility room as Republican leaders continue to block its display. Ahead of today's anniversary, Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee released 2 new reports on the aftermath of the January 6th attack. They found at least 33 pardoned January 6th defendants have since been charged, arrested, or convicted of new crimes. Congressmember Jamie Raskin said the pardons had created a, quote, private militia of proven street fighters that represent a nightmare for American public safety, he said. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has formally censured Democratic Senator, Navy veteran Mark Kelly over a video in which Kelly, along with 5 other Democratic lawmakers, urged service members to refuse unlawful orders. At the time, President Trump had called for the Democrats to be put to death. The Pentagon's now starting administrative steps to reduce Kelly's rank, citing what it calls reckless misconduct. This would affect Kelly's status as a retired Navy captain and cut his military pension. Senator Kelly blasted Secretary Hegseth, saying, quote, if Pete Hegseth, the most unqualified Secretary of Defense in our country's history, thinks he can intimidate me with a censure or threats to demote me or prosecute me, he still doesn't get it. I'll fight this with everything I've got, not for myself, but to send a message back that Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump don't get to decide what Americans in this country get to say about their government, Senator Kelly said. And the Trump administration's deployed 2,000 ICE agents to Minneapolis to probe alleged cases of fraud at child care facilities. U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commander Gregory Bovino, who's overseeing controversial immigration roundups in Los Angeles, Chicago, Charlotte, New Orleans, is expected to arrive in Minnesota. It comes as federal health officials announced they were freezing funding under the Child Care Assistance Program to all states. Meanwhile, Democratic Governor Tim Walz announced on Monday he's dropping his bid for a third term as governor in order to focus on rooting out fraud in Minnesota's public assistance and social services programs.
Every minute that I spend defending my own political interest would be a minute I can't spend defending the people of Minnesota against the criminals who prey on our generosity and the cynics who want to prey on our differences. So I've decided to step out of this race, and I'll let others worry about the election while I focus on the work that's in front of me for the next year.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. It's all about the oil, stupid. That's part of the headline of a new piece by our first guest, Mehdi Hassan, the founder of the online news site Zateo. In the piece, Hassan details how President Trump's repeatedly admitted that gaining access to Venezuela's oil was a key reason why the U.S. attacked Venezuela Saturday and kidnapped President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores. On Monday, Maduro and his wife pleaded not guilty to federal charges in a New York courtroom. Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves. This is part of what President Trump said on Saturday from Mar-a-Lago.
The oil companies are going to go in. They're going to spend money. We're going to take back the oil that, frankly, we should have taken back a long time ago.
On Sunday, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One he'd briefed oil executives ahead of the attack on Venezuela, something he did not do for members of Congress.
Spoken with the oil companies about going into Venezuela?
I have.
Which ones? Have you received any commitments?
All of them, yes.
Any commitments from the oil companies?
We want to go in so badly.
Did you speak to them before the operation took place about, did you maybe tip them off about what
before
was going on?
Before and after. And they want to go in, and they're going to do a great job for the people of Venezuela, and they're going to represent us well.
On Monday, oil company stocks surged in value. Paul Singer, a billionaire who's a top donor to President Trump, is set to profit immensely since his investment firm purchased Citgo, the U.S.-based subsidiary Venezuela's state-owned oil company, for $5.9 billion. The Venezuelan government estimates Citgo's value at $18 billion. On Monday, the United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting on the U.S. attack. Venezuela's ambassador to the U.N., Samuel Moncada, said Venezuela's targeted due to oil and energy resources.
Venezuela es víctima de estos ataques por razón de sus riquezas naturales.
Venezuela is a victim of these attacks as a result of its natural wealth. Oil, energy, strategic resources, and the geopolitical position of our country have historically been factors of greed and external pressure. When the use of force is used to control resources, impose governments, or redesign states, we are faced with a logic that refers to the worst practices of colonialism and neocolonialism. Accepting this logic implies opening the door to a profoundly unstable world where countries with greater military capabilities can decide by force the political and economic destiny of other states.
Joining us now is Mehdi Hassan, editor-in-chief and CEO of Zateo. Thanks so much for joining us again, Mehdi. Why don't you start off with the title of your piece? It's all about the oil, stupid. Or to be exact, yep, it's all about the oil. Talk about what happened, your response to the abduction of the Venezuelan president and his wife, the charging yesterday, what the Trump administration has said he is guilty of doing, actually didn't jive exactly with what he was charged with. But then what all this means, as Trump talks about narco-trafficking, but also, what, mentioned 25 times in his press conference afterwards, talked about the word oil?
Yeah, good morning, Amy. Thanks for having me. I wrote that piece on Saturday in a hurry at 7 a.m. when I woke up and saw the news that the U.S. had attacked Venezuela. And I pulled together, it's a list of Trump comments, basically, from the past few months and years. I went back to 2019, and Andrew McCabe, who was FBI deputy director, he wrote in his memoir in 2019, The Threat. He quotes Donald Trump saying in government during his first term, the country we should be invading is Venezuela. They're right next door, and they have all that oil. Trump was thinking about Venezuela's oil long ago, even during his period in the wilderness between 2020 and 2024. He did rallies where he spoke about, if I was still in charge, we would have Venezuela's oil. And of course, he spent much of December, just before the New Year's, talking about we want our oil rights back. Our oil was stolen from us. All BS, nonsense, lies. Said Venezuela took our oil. We want it back. They need to return it, he said. They took an oil tanker. He said, we're going to keep the oil. So I put that all together in a quick piece on Saturday, thinking, people are going to attack me as they did in 2003, when people like you and me, Amy, were saying, it's about the oil. Iraq was about the oil. But in those days, The people in power pretended it wasn't, right? George Bush, Dick Cheney and others, they said it was WMDs. They said it was democracy. They said it was Al-Qaeda. They at least pretended that it wasn't about the oil. Trump, as you just pointed out, has spent the last 3 days nonstop telling us it's about the oil. So you have all these people on the right and in the center, you know, saying the sophisticated analysis is it's not about the oil. That's a conspiracy theory. And then you have Donald Trump comes out, as usual, throws them all under the bus, says, no, it's about the oil. He just can't stop talking about the oil. Every time he's asked about anything, he says, well, let's talk about oil. And as you pointed out, oil company stocks are up. He gave oil companies a heads up that he didn't give members of Congress per the Constitution. If you go back to the election campaign, Amy, in Florida at Mar-a-Lago, he hosted a bunch of oil company executives and said, give me $1 billion. And I'll help you all out. He's helping them out. He's enjoying himself. This is what he likes. He's not actually done a full regime change. He's kept the Maduro government in place, Delcy Rodriguez, the vice president, in place, as long as she plays ball on the oil. He's made that very clear. So this was about oil. It was never about narco-terrorism or drugs. This is the same president who pardoned the former president of Honduras just a few weeks ago, who was convicted in an American court and imprisoned for bringing 400 tons of cocaine into the country. It's not about democracy. This is a president who loves dictators, his pals with Middle East and Asian and African dictators, loves Kim Jong-un. And this wasn't about, you know, running a cartel. The indictment that said that Nicolas Maduro was the head of a cartel, the Cartel of the Suns, as you pointed out earlier, De La Solis. It's a completely made-up cartel, as experts have said for years. I said it in my piece on Saturday. And now they've dropped it. Classic Trump administration. Whether it's someone that ICE is taking or some foreign leader that they've kidnapped, when they come in front of a judge, they always change their tune.
I want to go to Stephen Miller. He's got a number of titles, but mainly the deputy chief of staff. This is what he said on CNN.
By definition, we are in charge because we have the United States military stationed outside the country. We set the terms and conditions. We have a complete embargo on all of their oil and their ability to do commerce. So for them to do commerce, they need our permission. For them to be able to run an economy, they need our permission. So the United States is in charge. The United States is running the country during this transition period.
So that's Stephen Miller. We are in charge, he said. Mehdi Hasan, your response.
And Donald Trump has said the same, right? On Air Force One on Sunday night, it was very interesting to see Trump's comments because, as usual, his people went out to do operation cleanup on the media. They tried to clean up his remarks from Saturday where he said, we're going to run Venezuela. This is a famous anti-war, anti-regime change, anti-nation building, anti-neocon Republican president. And yet on Saturday, he says very quickly, we're going to run Venezuela. So on Sunday morning, all his people go out on the Sunday shows and say that's not what he meant. Marco Rubio does cleanup in aisle 11, goes on the Sunday morning shows and says what he meant was we're going to keep the blockade in place. And then he goes out on Air Force One on Sunday night and says, no, if I tell you who's in charge, it'll be controversial. They say, who? He goes, we're in charge. We're running it. And then you have Stephen Miller, who's also very blunt. I mean, he is the voice of Trump's id, making clear that might is right. The same people who told us for years that America needs to mind its own business, America needs to nation build at home, America needs to stop all these foreign wars, they're now loving this moment. You know, they're very hyped up. They think they've got a big win. They've loved this kind of smooth, elite special forces moment where they pulled Maduro out without any American losses. It has shades of post-war Iraq, mission accomplished, the hubris of the George Bush administration and the neocons in the spring of 2003. You know, it all looks fine in the short term. It's the long term and the medium term that's the problem. And they don't really have a plan for Venezuela. They don't really have a plan for any of these countries they're now threatening. Trump is threatening Cuba. He's threatening Colombia. He's threatening Iran. And of course, he's threatening Denmark by threatening to take Greenland. And Stephen Miller is now pushing this new line that might is right. You know, we're not going to pretend that we care about international law or UN resolutions or national sovereignty. We're going to take what we want. And you're seeing that in the MAGA media universe, too, Amy. You're seeing people like Matt Walsh, the far-right podcaster at The Daily Wire, who used to say, I'm a non-interventionist. We shouldn't go abroad. We should focus on America. Now he's saying, well, we should do whatever we want. We're a superpower. And third world countries just have to get on board. So that's an interesting development here in the MAGA movement, which claimed to be anti-war. And some of us, I'm sorry, Amy, just have to say this. Some of us spent much of 2024 warning people on the left that Donald Trump is not anti-war, will not be a dove. He will actually be a belligerent hawk who starts new wars. He bombed seven countries in 2024. 2024, seven countries in the space of his first 12 months, and now he's threatening to bomb four more, one of whom is a European ally.
Can you talk about Trump's national security strategy, which was released last month, which states the U.S. will, quote, assert and enforce a Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine? And, of course, Trump himself now is referring to the Monroe Doctrine.
Well, Donald Trump has the brain and comprehension and attention span of a toddler, and I say that in a very generous fashion. So when he hears new words, new terms, something that makes him sound good, he jumps on it. So, of course, when right-wing media came up with this idea of the Monroe Doctrine, borrowing from the Monroe Doctrine, of course, Donald Trump couldn't tell you what the Monroe Doctrine was if his life depended on it. He loves this idea that he's now doing something new in American history. He's a president who's breaking new ground, and this new ground being, we're going to run the hemisphere. You saw the post that the State Department put out yesterday saying it's our hemisphere, which people pointed out is both, performatively strong, like being the neighborhood bully, but also weak because you're basically saying, well, the rest of the world isn't ours, which is what previous American presidents suggested, that they were leader of the free world. Trump's basically saying, well, this is ours, and China, Russia can have their spheres of influence, and it is very 19th century-esque. Let's divide up the world between the powers. But on the national security strategy, obviously European governments were alarmed when they saw this national security strategy. It is... It's very hard to describe. It's nuts in many ways. It's, if you read it, it's written, it feels like parts of it are written by the Groypers, by the neo-Nazis around the Nick Fuentes types. It talks about the decline of Western civilization. It says Europe is being destroyed. It's committing suicide by allowing in non-white immigrants. It talks about, it treats the West and Europe as America's main enemy, because we know how much Donald Trump actually likes Vladimir Putin. So it's a very bizarre document that is both hawkish and belligerent and isolationist and withdrawalist at the same time. It's classic Trump. He has no consistent views or principles. When people say, what is Trumpism? We need to find out this guiding ideology. Donald Trump is a collection of impulses. And that's why we're now seeing in the space of 72 hours, the same people who spent years telling us that regime change is bad, this is a different Republican Party, this is not the George W. Bush neocon party, suddenly they sound even more hawkish than Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney, as I said in my piece, whatever the opposite of rolling in your grave is, he's doing it right now. Because I don't remember George Bush and Dick Cheney threatening four countries at a single press conference, one of them being in a European country. Trump is doing that. So this isn't about ideology. This isn't about some new doctrine. This is about might being right. This is about Trump's nativist impulses meeting his belligerent impulses. There was a cartoon that Pete Hegseth retweeted from the Trump War Room account over the weekend, which has Donald Trump standing astride Latin America with a stick in his hand. That is their approach to the world right now. Let's see how long it lasts.
And Iran, you have on Monday the Jerusalem Post reporting there are multiple indications the U.S. and Israel are looking into regime change options in Iran. Lindsey Graham was on Fox. He put on a hat that said, make Iran great again. Are you concerned about moving from Venezuela to Iran?
100%. And also, Graham took a picture with that hat standing alongside Trump. And Donald Trump, of course, we were told, would be the guy who doesn't want a new war in the Middle East. We were told he would do a deal with Iran and do deals with everyone in the region. And, of course, he became the first American president to bomb Iran. He did what Obama and Bush and Biden did not do. He bombed Iran last year in violation of international law. He claimed it was to stop this, quote-unquote, 12-day war between Israel and Iran. But smarter analysts like Tridhar Parsi and others pointed out that this was unresolved, that 2026 would be a year where we would see military conflict again. If you had asked me prior to the New Year's what I was most worried about, I would have said Iran and Venezuela. And Venezuela's happened. Iran is next. In fact, the day before he bombed Venezuela, Amy. Actually, let me get the timeline right. On Christmas Day, he bombs Nigeria. On Christmas Day. On New Year's Eve, at a party in Mar-a-Lago, he's asked, what's your New Year's resolution? He says, peace. Peace on earth. Then, on Friday, January 2nd, he posts, we're locked and loaded, ready to attack Iran. And then on Saturday, he attacks Venezuela. This is the most hawkish president of my lifetime at the moment, right now, as of right now. George Bush must be wondering what's going on in his house in Dallas, looking at what Trump's up to. So, yes, I'm very worried about a war with Iran. The Israelis and the Israeli press, as you mentioned, are loving this moment. They're seeing this as a moment. Remember, they're tying Venezuela to Iran. They're saying Venezuela supported Hezbollah, Iran supports Hezbollah. These regimes are all connected. It's kind of like a new axis of evil. So, of course, they're pushing for an attack on Iran. This is not just Netanyahu, by the way. I know we love in this country just to say Netanyahu. It's the entire Israeli political spectrum. Benny Gantz, an opposition leader, former general, openly called, I think yesterday or Sunday, for the Americans to take out the regime in Iran as well. And of course, this is what hubris does to you.